Have you heard the one about the blimp squadron in Tillamook during World War II? You've queued up the Offbeat Oregon Du Jour audio edition, and I'll tell you all about that in a minute here. The blimp squadron was the first line of defense for Oregon against enemy subs and balloon bombs during World War II, and the massive dirigibles were housed in the largest clear-span wood buildings in the world, near Tillamook. One of those buildings burned in 1992, and the other one houses the Tillamook Air Museum today. So I'm going to tell you the story of these things, but before I do, let me introduce myself. My name's Finn J.D. John, and I do a weekly newspaper column called Offbeat Oregon History. The column got started in 2008, and it runs today in about a dozen community newspapers around the state. It tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghai'd sailors and Skid Road bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. And this RSS feed brings you one of our archive columns from the column every morning in your choice of text and pictures or audio-only formats. You're listening, of course, to the audio one. So let me tell you about these blimp squadron. Here's the story. Just south of Tillamook, tucked into a deep green valley surrounded by dairy farms, is the largest clear-span wood frame building in the world. This is the Tillamook Naval Air Station Dirigible Hangar B, whipped together in just a few months during the early years of World War II. Its world's largest title is one it shares with several other dirigible hangars built on the same plans in other parts of the country at the same time. The hangar in Tillamook is the only one of these that's currently open to the public. These hangars have a 7-acre footprint. They're 296 feet wide and 1,050 feet long, big enough for 3 football fields lined with bleachers on each side. There's about 2.5 million board feet of gorgeous, clear, old-growth Douglas fir in each one of these. Tillamook Hangar B was home to a squadron of 8 military blimps. The conventional wisdom is that these blimps arrived on the scene too late to have a real impact on the war, that by the time they were regularly patrolling the West Coast in late 1943, the threat of Japanese attacks had passed. But that isn't entirely true. In fact, we'll probably never know the full extent to which the Oregon-based blimp fleet prevented attacks on the West Coast, but it's a good bet that if they'd been suddenly grounded in, say, oh, I don't know, the summer of 1944, we might have noticed. And some people might actually have been killed. Let me tell you about that. But first, during the years just before World War II, the U.S. was getting increasingly nervous about Nazi and Imperial Japanese submarine fleets. It was hard to imagine a fleet of surface warships skulking unnoticed across the Atlantic Ocean to attack the U.S., but a submarine could do just that, and lurk there, waiting for prey to steam by for months on end. Regular airplanes were okay against subs, but couldn't stay in the air for very long and didn't have the ability to hover over a convoy all day. Blimps, though, blimps were perfect. Their main drawback was that they were huge and easy for aircraft to shoot down. But for defending shipping near the U.S. mainland, enemy aircraft were not a problem. Nothing could reach the U.S. mainland. So the Navy got started building a network of 17 massive blimp hangars at strategic and sheltered locations around the coastline. To cover the area of the West Coast from Seattle down to Northern California, the Navy built 2 of these massive hangars at Tillamook. The airships they put in them were Goodyear K-class soft-sided blimps, 216 feet long, filled with helium rather than hydrogen. They moved at a maximum speed of roughly 70 miles an hour, had a range of 2,000 miles, and could float around up there for up to 3 days, looking straight down into the sea in search of the shadowy outline of a submarine. If they found one, they had 4 depth charge bombs on board with which to do something about it, and of course the ability to contact other Navy assets, bombers, warships, etc., as well. They also carried a pair of 50-caliber machine guns. But the West Coast was only visited by 10 Japanese submarines, most of them early in the war, before the squadron was up to speed. By the time the blimp patrols were happening regularly, Japan had pulled its subs back to help defend its other naval assets from an increasingly overwhelming American Pacific fleet. In the east, the blimps had a substantial effect, although they sank few, if any, U-boats. The presence of a blimp over a convoy was usually enough to prevent an attack on it. A submarine at torpedo depth was easy to spot, especially on a sunny day, and nothing wrecks a gunner's concentration like a well-placed depth charge. And on the West Coast, well, in the West, conventional wisdom for a long time was that the blimps just flew patrols, looking for something that wasn't there but might arrive at any time for the remainder of the war. But it turns out they did a few other things as well. Japan had a desperate plan, late in the war, to light the forests of Oregon and Washington on fire. To do this, they launched unmanned balloons with incendiary bombs on the prevailing winds to be carried across the sea. After the amount of time they calculated it would take them to drift across the Pacific Ocean, the balloons would deflate, fall to the ground, and explode, torching the surrounding forest. If a bomb fell in a West Coast town, so much the better, as the casualties and the fear of future attacks would undermine American morale, or so the theory went. The Japanese launched almost 10,000 of these balloons in late 1944 and early 1945. About 300 of them reportedly made it through. Fighter planes were helpful, but the balloons rode the air currents very high up, about 35,000 feet, more than 6 miles. Getting airplanes off the ground and up that high into the air could take as long as an hour and burn plenty of fuel, leaving not too much time to fly around looking for bombs before having to return to the airfield. Enter the blimp fleet. We'll probably never know how many balloons blimps knocked out of the sky with their machine guns. The U.S. government was keeping a lid on the whole thing, hoping the lack of hubbub would convince the Japanese that their balloon program wasn't working, a strategy that, by the way, worked nicely as it turns out. But we do know that at least one blimp operating out of Tillamook was assigned to search out and intercept these. So the squadron at Tillamook may not have seen much action against submarines, but it's possible they saved the U.S. from something even more dangerous. At the end of the war, the Navy was a lot less worried about having to defend the U.S. mainland, which was all the blimps were really useful for. By 1948, the Navy had decided to close the Tillamook station down. The county leased and later bought the place to run as an airport. The hangars were used for a variety of things, civilian blimp tours, a lumber mill, balloon testing, and even aircraft manufacturing. A massive fire demolished one of the Tillamook blimp hangars in 1992 while it was crammed full of hay. Today, the surviving hangar is the home to the Tillamook Air Museum, which features a huge collection of vintage aircraft and memorabilia. That's it for today. You can check out all the columns and subscribe to either RSS feed by going to www.offbeatoregon.com. Both of the Offbeat Oregon Du Jour feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a computer or netbook or tablet as well. Everything here is covered under Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening. Drop me a line anytime at finn@offbeatoregon.com or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Especially if you're going to be in the Corvallis area and have time for a cup of coffee sometime. I'll be back tomorrow at around 6 a.m. with the next episode. Until then, well, happy trails.